Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was a special edition in conjunction with the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival's 10th anniversary and was recorded on February 19th, 2013 at Monk's. This edition of Tell Us Something features six storytellers telling a story based upon the theme 10. This week's story comes to us from Aaron Roos and is titled 10 Hours in Africa. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Good evening, monks. Good evening. I remember Pearl Jam 10 came out. I was 10. It was the 10th of June. It was a tenuous day. No, that's not my story. But okay. Long time ago, I moved to a crazy giant town on the edge of the North American continent called Los Angeles, and some of you have probably heard this, so bear with me. I got a job in reality television, which I now call the downfall of art and Western society, because it's a lot of fun. But when I was there, I got onto a show. I think Trademark, I'm not allowed to say this, the show is on, but it's we'll call it The Bamazing Brace. And they said, don't say it, so I didn't say it. Anyway, I got on there, and the job I had was a really interesting job. I did casting for these shows, and they paid me a bunch of money at the time, and I was broke actor. I had $38 when I moved down there. So I took these jobs, and they were like, oh, hey, get people, bring them in, put them on these shows, make them look horrible in front of America. They'll quit their jobs and get divorced. It's going to be awesome. I was like, that sounds so good. Where do I sign up, you know? So I started doing it. Pretty soon, they changed the job, and they decided to send me on the road. Remember to breathe. Okay. And so I went on the road, and one of the first assignments I had was to actually pick up contestants from around the world as they got kicked off of this show. And so we had a safe house, and at this specific episode, I know it was a safe house. I was keeping the whole world from knowing who got kicked off The Amazing Race, because that's like worth millions of dollars, apparently. And anyway, so the safe house was in Portugal. So every 2 days, I would travel halfway across the globe, pick up a team, bring them back, drop them off, stay the night, get on a plane, do the same thing. And we'd do that for like 13 teams, and then we'd be done. And the end of the show, and yada, yada. So this story takes place. This story is called My 10 Hours in Africa. And it's true, I was in Africa for 10 hours, and I flew from Portugal to Morocco, Morocco to another country, I forget, and then from there to Burkina Faso, which is on the western bulge of Africa on the west side. And I went to a town called Ouagadougou, 1.5 million people, very third world, but very advanced, the center of communications for the African continent over there. But anyway, the story takes place as I'm flying into Ouagadougou. It's very early in the morning. And as the plane lands, I realize that I'm no longer in Missoula. And it's hot and it's red and the sun's just cresting way off on this flat, flat parcel of land. You can just see it creeping up. And I realize that I'm starting to get sick. And I had been putting it off for a long time and I knew it was coming. And I'm getting the flu and I've been traveling for 30 hours. And I land, and everyone goes through customs, a very tiny airport, about a quarter the size of Missoula's airport. And as I'm going through customs, I realize that when I got to Morocco, they made me check my bag, which was just a backpack. But I had a beard. I had a one-way ticket. I looked like I could be from just about anywhere. So they put four S's on the bottom of your boarding pass, and they send you in a different line. So I'm in this different line. I'm waiting, and they have this very beautiful French accent in Ouagadougou, and the man said, where are you from? I said, I'm from America. I said, what are you doing here? What are you doing? Why are you here? But we're not allowed to say what we're doing because they want to keep it a secret. And all my credentials were in my bag. My bag stuck in the customs thing. And won't let me have my bag until I tell them where I'm going. So I'm kind of stuck in this catch-22 with this guy. And he finally just looks at me and he's like, I said, that's what I'm doing. It's a movie thing, you know. And so he allows me to go outside and see if my drivers are. I said, I think I have a driver out there. He'll have a card. I'll clear all this up. Just let me go outside and I can, you know, continue on. Everyone's cleared through customs at this point. It's just me and this young Ouagadougou gentleman. They call themselves Wagons, Waga, the city of Waga, and they're Wagons. So we're sitting there, and he doesn't believe a word I'm saying. So he lets me go outside. And as I go outside, it's an open airport. You can see the sun coming up, like I said. And as soon as I walk out, there's just this, about 40 or 50 young Wagon men, probably about 15, 20 years of age. And they start to just kind of swarm me. And they have phone cards and SIM chips for phones. So you can turn your cell phone into a world phone. And I'm trying to call with my very fancy, amazing brace phone, and it's not working, and I can't get a hold of anybody, and I don't know what to do. And the big rule is, do not be late. No matter what happens, be there, pick up the teams, get them on the airplane, get them back to the safe house. No questions, just make sure it happens. Okay, so I'm getting a little stressed out. I know I have a big day ahead of me. And they all start singing In the Club by 50 Cent, all these young walking. And it's you know, it's 5 in the morning, and I'm like, wow, and In the Club, yes, you know the song In the Club. And I was like, yeah, it's so good. It's the best song ever. 50 Cent, yes? I was like, yeah, man, he's so good. And so I make the mistake. My phone's not working. This one young man comes up, and he says, we have these cards. If you buy one, you put it in your phone, it'll work. You can call your boss. And I said, oh, okay. Well, when you travel with this show, they give you all this money and credit cards, and you have to hide it everywhere. And I had an extra fake passport that was to be hidden and used at certain times. And so I make the mistake with the flu and the tired flight and long day, and I open my wallet, and I've got about 2,000 euros in my wallet, and they just all look at it. Whoa. And I was like, shit, that was not a good idea to do that. And I pull out, like, a euro, you know, and I'm like, hey, how many phone cards can I get for this? You know, and they're like, whoa. And so he gives me a couple phone cards. I put it in the thing. It doesn't work. I'm starting to freak out. I don't know what to do. This is it. I have no luggage. I have my passport on me, a bunch of money. I'm in an African country. It's 5 in the morning, and I'm getting sick with the flu, and I have no idea where I am or what to do or how to contact anybody. They give us this Bible, and it has thousands and thousands of phone numbers and names and emergency contacts, but that's in my bag, and the other guy's holding it. So finally, I'm sitting there. I'm kind of getting a little nervous, and the crowd starts to disperse, and the customs gentleman walks out, and he just hands me this phone. He says, you have 30 seconds. I was like, for what? I don't know what you... He says, my cousin works at the film office here in Ouagadougou. I figured you were with the film company. I called him. Yes, he knows who you are, and he has you to ride. Here, please talk. You have 30 seconds. I was like, hello? Yes, yes. You know, and he tells me that my driver is there in the group. He's staring at me, and he's talking to him on another phone, and he knows that I'm there, and his name is Jean. And I said, okay. And he says, ask for him. He knows you're there. Just ask for him. I said, oh, okay. Jean? And about 40 of these young guys just kind of look at each other. And like one guy just slowly like kind of raises his hand. And at that moment I'm thinking, not very convincing, you know? There's a good chance this is not Jean. But I have to go with this guy, I have no choice. So I say, okay, In the Club, here we go, you know? And we start to go, and Jean says, please, come with me. And so I follow Jean, and we're walking through this small parking lot, this asphalt parking lot, and you can feel the heat as the sun's getting a little higher in the sky. And off in the distance is this just very large, a million and a half people, the city, but it's open sewers, and it's skyscrapers, and it's poverty, and it's opulence. It's very very confusing, and my flu head is starting to get to me, and he starts to walk, so I start to follow, and just as we leave, all these young men follow behind us, and we're all just jumping, singing 50 Cent as we walk to the van, and we go from an asphalt parking lot through this little thing of trees to a concrete parking lot through this little thing of trees to a dirt parking lot, all empty. There's no cars anywhere, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is it. This is a possibility where I die. And I was really concerned because I didn't know what to do. So I said, I have my passport. As long as I have, they can have all my money. As long as I have my passport, I can get out of the country. At least I have that. And so we get to the third parking lot. And as they're all singing in the club, they all go silent and form a single file line behind me. I'm following Jean, and we're heading towards this little group of trees through this dirt trail. And I just keep getting these flashes of images in my head from, you know, movies where people wake up in a tub full of ice and no kidneys and stuff like that. And I'm getting worried about it. And so finally we turn this corner, and there in the distance, as the sun's peeking up behind us over these small huts and houses, is shining a single beam of light on this beautiful van. And on the van it says WRP, World Race Productions. And I'm like, oh, my God. And finally, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. This is going to be all right. We start walking to the van, and I notice that Jean goes to the right, and I go to the left to get in. And suddenly in my mind, I'm thinking, this is where they're going to get me. This is where they're going to hold me and take the money and beat me up or kill me. I don't know. So in my infinite wisdom, I run around the other side of the van as fast as I can and pull my passport out and keep it in my hand out of my back pocket. And then as I jump in the car door on the passenger side, about 40 hands reach in, and I close the door on all these hands, you know. And I look over at John, and he looks at me, and I was like, what do I do? He said, you should give them some money. I said, okay, you know. I already bought the phone card, so I thought I was doing pretty good with these guys. We did the whole 50 Cent thing. I brought up Snoop Dogg, too. I forgot that. I brought up Snoop Dogg, and they had no idea who he was. And I didn't know 50 Cent in the club at the time, so I was kind of just, But I knew Snoop Dogg, but Snoop Dogg's not big in Ouagadougou. So anyway, I closed the door that you should give them money. I said, oh, my God, this is crazy. I open up my wallet. I reach in my pocket, and I pull out about 25 euros and some change, and I hand it to them, and they all get very quiet, and they're looking at the money. They're accounting it. The older boys are divvying out the change to the younger boys, and then the medium-sized boys are taking some of the paper money, and then the oldest boy is taking, like, the 20s and the 5s, and he turns to me and says, this is not enough. I said, oh. And I look at John. He's like, you should give them some more money. I was like, I don't have much more money I'm going to give them. You know, this is... So I open my wallet, and this hand reaches in and takes all the euros out. And it wasn't my cash, which was pretty good. It was the company's money, but very scary. The door slumps shut. They all start screaming and yelling and cheering me and smiling and waving, singing 50 Cent, running off in the distance. Jean lights up a huge joint, turns the van on, and Bob Marley's Three Little Birds just starts blasting through the speakers. And I'm like, okay, that was kind of crazy. So we head into town. We're heading into Ouagadougou proper, and it's just this craziness. I'm like, what is going on? I've never seen anything like this. There's a man sweating. It's about 8:30, 9 o'clock now. He's just sweating profusely with a three-piece, beautiful teal blue suit on, standing for the bus with a briefcase, and he keeps adjusting his glasses. And right next to him is a man wearing a kind of a cloth half diaper, and he's defecating in an open sewer right next to this gentleman. It was just the juxtaposition of these things, and I'm thinking to myself, where am I? This is so crazy. So I try to talk to John. He doesn't speak English. I don't speak French. He just knows where to take me. We go to the Four Seasons in Ouagadougou, which is ludicrous. And it's the biggest building. It's the most beautiful building, and it's all guarded. We pull up. And as I'm running up the stairs, the entire race, which is about 140 people that work on the show, come running out the steps, and they're screaming, and they're brushing their teeth, and drinking coffee, and pulling up their pants. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, well, we worked out the route, but the team's found an extra plane ride, and they bought tickets, and they're 5 hours ahead of us. We have to get out to the town of Bingo immediately. I was like, oh, my God. I've been traveling for 30 hours. I feel like I'm going to vomit. I just got mugged. I thought I was going to die. I'm now a big fan of 50 Cent. You know, things are changing in my world. And they take off, and this one guy's kind of calm and cool. He's like, Roos, listen, I know you're here to get the contestants. It's okay. Go upstairs, take a shower, come down. This guy's going to take you out to bingo. You can get the contestants. You can go home. I said, okay. So I walk in, and I go to the front desk, and one of the first things this guy that started the show, this guy Bertram von Munster, he started Cops. That was his big deal, right? So he's this crazy Dutch guy. He's like 2,000 years old, very strict. And when we left, he said, don't wear hats. Always shave your face and never wear shorts. It insults people, and we're representing America. I walked up to the front desk to check in, and I say I'm here to check in, and I turn to my left, and there's Bertram, and I'm wearing a hat, and I'm stubbly, and I got shorts on. And I want to, you know, get sick. I want to puke because I have the flu. And he just looks at me, and he just, and he turns around and leaves. I'm like, oh, man, this is, okay, so strike two. I go up, I come back down. This young man, John, gets me in the van. We start driving out of Ouagadougou proper. We're heading toward the town of Bingo. So we're driving to Bingo, and pretty soon it's buildings and skyscrapers, and then it's little towns and apartment buildings, and then it's these little sectioned-off areas with open sewers, and pretty soon we're on a dusty dirt road, and it's just small villages and yurts, and we get a little further, and pretty soon it's just trees, and pretty soon we get about 45 miles outside of Ouagadougou, and it's just me and John and Bob Marley, and bush. There's nothing as far as the eye can see. And about 20 minutes later, he turns on this little road, and there's a sign about the size of a pack of cigarettes on a stick, a black sign with white lettering that says, Bingo. Little. And John's like, yeah. He turns the wheel, and I'm like, okay. That's not what I thought. I thought it was going to be bigger. So we drive down this road for a while, and we go over this beautiful train bridge and over this river, and we come down, and then we got to cross through a dry riverbed, and pretty soon we pull up, and there's 45 SUVs, all drivers, waiting for people on the production, so when that part of the show is done, they can load up the cameras and the crew and drive them to the next place. So I say, well, okay, well, at least I know I'm in the right place. John turns the car off. He gets outside, smokes a cigarette, and I don't know what to do. He doesn't speak my language. I don't speak his. I kind of look off in the distance, and I happen to just see a giant, a boom mic, a microphone on a big stick bouncing along the tree line about 200 yards away. I was like, oh, that's where they are. Okay. So I put on my backpack. I open the door. I get out. I try to thank him in French. I think I made it up. You know, I was, like, nervous, and I made up some French words. He just looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about. I start walking towards this boom mic, and as I do, I look up, and in the sky is the largest purple-black cloud I've ever seen anything like it in my life. It was a giant dust storm, and within seconds, the whole thing completely engulfs me. I'm only 15, 20 feet from the car. I get back in. John gets in. We wait for a half an hour as this thing just rocks this vehicle that we're in. Pretty soon, I get out. I start walking again towards the boom mic, and I look up, and there's another cloud, even darker and more menacing, and it starts to dump. I can see this wall of water just forming in the horizon, and it's just dumping rain, like uncontrollably dumping rain. And I turn, and John and all the SUVs just take off down this road, and they know that if that river floods, there's no way we're going to get across it. So they take off, and now I'm just standing in the middle of Burkina Faso in the bush with an iPad, a MacBook Pro, a bag of water, and a passport and no money. I'm just kind of standing there. I see the boom mic. I start running for it. The rain's coming down on me pretty hard at this point. It's getting in my eyes. I'm losing. I don't know where I'm heading for. Pretty soon the boom mic vanishes in the distance, and I just start running. And I turn back because I thought I heard something. As I come around this corner of this, around this little tree, and as I do, I run into a small little yard, essentially, of like two huts and a flat mud container that catches rainwater for this family. And a little two-year-old boy runs out, and he's cleaning himself in the rain, and he's naked, and I run around the corner, and we run right into each other, and he screams, and I scream, and then I realize, like, I'm in this guy's living room, you know? So I take off, I run back, I get the contestants. I know, we're almost done. I get the contestants, and their challenge at that point, right when I met them, was they had to milk a camel and then drink an entire bowl of warm camel milk. Well, the girls lost. They were the last team to cross the finish line. The reason they lost was that their camel wasn't producing any milk, so they're milking this thing and milking it. If they finally get a little bit and they spill it, They also both got sick on the challenge because on the teats of this camel were all these lice and bugs, and when they were drinking the milk, it was really difficult, you know? You don't want that in your milk. So they lost, and I grab them, and they're crying. The guy says, "I'm sorry, you're the last team to cross the finish line. You've been eliminated." And I grab them, and we get in the truck, and we start heading back to Ouagadougou. Well, we get to the river's flooded. We got to park the car. We got to portage everything, the entire crew, up and over this train track. As we're going up and over the train track, the train comes. And, you know, visions of Stand By Me are flashing. And I'm like, what do we jump? Like, what? And then also in my mind, I'm thinking, of course the train's going to come. You know, so we run. Everyone makes it. Of course, the train slows down. It's like a little passenger train. We get off, we get back in the car, and traveling with us is a security team, this guy who is a British intelligence agent, and I said, "This has been a real tough day, Bob. I'm going to need some help getting to the airport. I don't know." And he said, he was a British guy, and he said, "Roos, it's going to be all right. Just get in the truck, and we'll drive to the airport, and I'll drop you off." And that's a bad British, but that's what he sounded like. As we got it closer to town, I had to get out of the truck and stand by the back because every time we hit a stop sign, he said that people were going to steal all of our stuff. So I had to get in the bag and just kind of stand there, like being real cool with my shorts and my stubbly face and my hat and my whiteness in, you know, a country of no white people. And it was like, "You're not very threatening. We're still going to take your shit." Get back in. As we get into town, the girls are starving. We have to get them some food. I find some goat kebabs at this place. And as they're eating the goat kebabs, this cloud of bugs comes in from nowhere. Now, every 7 years in this part of the world, there's an infestation of a very giant bug called a cane fly. And it looks like a huge mosquito. They're like this big. And they come out of the ground. They form these huge clouds in the sky. They mate, and then the females go back into the ground, and then the males go, like, party and die. And you can see it from space. It's huge. I mean, it's this amazing cloud of life flying over the savannah or whatever it is. And so as their girls are eating, they're getting attacked by bugs. I did their interviews before we left, and both of them are deathly afraid of bugs. And so now they're losing their marbles. They're really freaking out. It's getting in their hair. It's getting in their food. As we're talking to each other, the bugs are flying into our mouths. We get back into the car. We head to the airport. We're almost to the airport. Bob says, "Just don't worry about it, Aaron. If the bugs fly in your mouth, just spit them out." I was like, "Yes." So we get to the airport. Now, the airport is open air. As I mentioned before, it's an open air. It's kind of like a school in California. You know, there's not a lot of walls, and the bugs are everywhere. Over every single piece of wall or floor or desk is covered with bugs. Now, everyone from Ouagadougou is just standing there, and the bugs are flying around them, and they're huge. Once every 7 years. I mean, I can understand people being cool with something when they're from that area, but that doesn't happen all the time. It's like once every 7 years. The girls are getting the bugs in their hair. The bugs are flying down my shirt, and they start screaming, and the customs agent looks at me, and he said, "These girls are crazy." And he pulls the twin girls. I forgot to tell you they were twins. And he pulls them aside, and he says, "I cannot let you go. They are crazy." And so I was like, "Hey, guys, you got to do me a favor here. Okay, I'm kind of not doing so good right now. Please calm down." And they're like, "You're in my hair. In the ball." I'm trying really hard not to lose it at this part. And we finally get in line, and we get through. There's 4 or 5 customs and men with guns and grenades strapped to their chests. And we get all the way through, and I get them through, and they're walking down the jetway, and the last woman that checks, she kind of does a quick pat down just to see if anything's been missed on you. And she looks at me, and she's a very sweet Wagon woman, and she just kind of takes a second and smiles, and I smile at her, and she says, "Thank you for coming to Ouagadougou." And I went to just kind of like give her a high five, and she didn't know what that was all about. And so I kind of had the weird high five thing of like. And then I awkwardly said, "Thank you for having us." That's my 10 hours in Africa.
This edition of Tell Us Something is brought to you by the bookstore at the University of Montana, the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, and Monks. Tell Us Something would like to thank the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, staff, and faculty of the University of Montana, as well as the general Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Monks, regularly bringing Missoula great live music. MonksBarMT.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. The Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, bringing amazing documentary films to the Missoula community for 10 years. BigSkyFilmFest.org. Jonathan Marquis, illustrator, artist, and community organizer. JonathanMarquis.com. That's Marquis with a Q. Matt LaRubio, screen printing done right. MLaRubio@gmail.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for funky gifts, cards, and music. Great people, great music. RockinRudy's.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Find us on Twitter.com/PSST. Tell us. And on Facebook and at TellUsSomething.org. Interested in telling a story? Call 406-203-4683 or email pst.tell.us.something@gmail.com to pitch your story. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours?